Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast. Mark Schanowski joined by Jay Michael, who covers the Indiana Pacers. He's the beat reporter for the Indianapolis Star. I've known Jay for a number of years. Obviously, you used to work in the NBC Comcast family at NBC Sports Washington, D.C. Jay, it's good to talk to you. And obviously, it's been fun with the Pacers in their development, turning from a team that was kind of fighting mediocrity to a team now that looks like a rising force in the East.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they surprised a lot of people. And, you know, Kevin Pritchard often says, the president of the team, that, you know, he admitted, like, you know, you normally ask guys in this position, do you expect to have a season like this? And he said, oh, yeah, of course. And, you know, KP is pretty honest. Absolutely not. We exceeded expectations. And I can respect that, you know. And, you know, everything about what they accomplished last year, you know, had everything to do with – it had to do with a lot of things. But, you know, obviously Oladipo for Paul George, that you move out an all-star and you get an all-star back, and maybe one who ends up having a higher ceiling in the end. Nobody thought they won that trade when it happened, and I think people are starting to look at that trade a little bit differently now. So I think the success they had, it all just kind of fed off of what Oladipo was able to do. Because if you take him off of his team, you know, and you just replace him with an average player, the kind of player they expected Oladipo to be, they're not a 48-win team last year. They're probably not a playoff team.
You know, it's really a testament to a guy's work ethic to transform yourself from a player who was picked number 2 overall in the draft by Orlando and then was a bit of a disappointment there. He gets traded to Oklahoma City, and then he tries to figure out how to pair with Russell Westbrook, and then, of course, the trade that sent him to Indiana. And, you know, just the change in his game, he basically transformed his body last summer, and he came out just wanting to prove to everybody that he was a guy that was picked number 2 in the draft. In talking with Victor, you know, sometimes he comes across as very serious and doesn't want to play around in interviews. He seems like a guy that's incredibly driven. In getting to know him, what's the guy all about?
You know, it's funny. Right before he turned pro, he let me sit in when I was in the NBC family. I sat in on a private workout he had with the Pelicans. And then I did about a 5-minute interview with him after that on camera. And I can honestly say he's the same guy now that he was then in these 4 or 5 years later. But I think he is incredibly serious. But I think the big thing with him is, like, he's really understated. But he's a real actual – he's really a funny guy. He's kind of different. He's old school in a lot of ways. I just actually spent last week – I was in Miami with him. Sat in on his training session there, talked to some of his people, watch his workout. I mean, it was the first time I've ever seen a player work out to a soundtrack of love songs.
mean, well, we know he's a good singer. We've seen that talent.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, and he's, you know, and he's humming along singing If I Ever Fall in Love while he's in a workout. How many times do you see that around the NBA? If you walk into a gym, you see players training or working out. You never hear that.
No, so I would say never. That's pretty safe.
Yeah, he's just, I just think personality-wise, he's just different. And I think guys like us aren't used to seeing guys like him. And so, yeah, he comes across as really serious, that he doesn't have a sense of humor, but he actually is a really funny guy. And he's really engaging type of personality, and he's a really thoughtful person. So being around him, I see him is very similar to what he was when he first came in. But I think, you know, the biggest thing I took away from my time with him in Miami is he's trying to be a bigger brand or a name. He's trying to really put himself out there. So maybe this upcoming season, you know, you see him try to break out of that shell a little bit, since he's now confident – and secure that he's not only earned his spot with a team, but he's the guy, and that he can maybe step out on that ledge a little bit more than maybe he was previously willing to. Because let's face it, when he was in Orlando, that organization wasn't very well run. That roster had a lot of good pieces, and they didn't fit. And they tried to make him into a point guard, if you recall. Which,
right.
You know, it's a classic case of if you put a good player in the wrong spot and you use him the wrong way and you put him in the wrong system and you surround him with other pieces that don't fit, then it's hard for him to shine. And it's the opposite in Indiana.
Well, you look at his numbers. Last year, he averaged 23 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He shot 48% from the field, 37% from the three-point line. Is there more in there? I mean, you know, Indiana really should have beat the Cavs in the first round of the playoffs. Is Oladipo maybe driven by that to show that not only can he be an all-star, but maybe he can even be an MVP candidate?
He thinks so. And, you know, let's face it, in the Eastern Conference, now that you know who is left in the conference, and you won't have to be in LeBron James' shadow now. Maybe there's more of a chance for him to break out and challenge a guy like Giannis up in Milwaukee, or challenge Kawhi up in Toronto for that title. So to get into at least, I think, the best player in the conference, right? To be the best player in the league, you got to be, or an MVP, I think you have to be somewhere close to the best player in the conference. So I think that ability, that landscape is there, and they've upgraded the roster, I think, enough at this point to put more shooters around Victor that, in theory, while his numbers were really good last season, what you saw in the playoffs, you know, when you're in a 7-game series and teams only got a scheme for one guy or one team and they can be more focused in on taking things away, he had difficulty in certain spots against Cleveland because they really didn't have enough shooters on his team. Lance Stephenson is great for a lot of things, but a two-guard that can't shoot, that's a basic job description of a two-guard. So he didn't have a two-guard behind him who can shoot. Darren Collison was a good three-point shooter last year, if you look at the numbers.
Yeah.
But he's not a high-volume, quick-twitch three-point shooter. He's got to be wide open. He's got to set his feet, and it takes him a little bit of time to get it off. So Cleveland knew they could really help heavily on Oladipo and take away these other guys. And now that he has a little bit more flexibility around him with some other shooters, with McDermott, I think more so with Tyreek Evans and McDermott. I think McDermott is a low-risk, potentially high-reward guy for them.
Yeah, we've seen the McDermott show here in Chicago, J. Michael. We know all about that. He's about to start on his fifth team in 5 years, and everyone, when they first get him, they go, hey, this is going to be a great shooter. He's going to add something to our offense. And then they realize he can't guard anybody, and they don't know where to play him. Hopefully the light finally comes on, but, you know, when you get to year five, you're pretty much the guy you're going to be, don't you think?
I think so. And, you know, my critique of the McDermott signing, I said, you know, everything's about ceiling. I know he can shoot the three. Well, he did shoot the three really well last year for Dallas, but let's be real. Dallas was a really bad team.
Yeah.
And I feel I'm always reticent about hyping up guys who, you know, their resume tells you this is what they are, but then they have that small bump in production and you think that's who they are. No, that's usually the exception. The mean is the other 4.5 years of his career that you're completely overlooking, right? But you're right. My biggest criticism was defensively. You know, he can't guard a stop sign.
Right.
And so, you know, I think McDermott is a guy who's, you know, potentially good in spots. But you're going to rely on him to win you games in the fourth quarter? I don't think so. If that's the plan, then I think that's a flawed plan. But, you know, I just think he has to be on a good enough team where you can hide him, maybe give him some support. And maybe he hits a couple of threes in a game that maybe instead of you scoring 105 points in a game, you end up getting 110. And maybe that's enough for you to get over the hump. You win a couple of – maybe you get a couple of extra close wins because you have McDermott's three-point shooting, but you got to find a way to compensate for him defensively. And that's a big question mark.
You mentioned Tyreek Evans. He had an under-the-radar season in Memphis where he really was a consistent producer for that team. But, again, they lost Mike Conley. They were one of the worst teams in the league. He was getting a lot of empty points. Can he be a big-time contributor to a team that has ambitions of doing things in the playoffs at this point in his career?
Yeah, I think he can be. You know, my biggest question with Tyreek is, you know, his efficiency. You know, he's usually a high-volume shooter, but he can get you buckets. Look, this team last year, if they would have had a Tyreek, they beat Cleveland. They just didn't have any three-point shooting, or you know, they had three-point shooting in Bogdanovich. But Bogdanovich is, you know, a guy who in the playoffs, if you look at him career-wise, he normally gets taken away because teams know how to defend him because of his limitations offensively. The Pacers are a team that in today's era of the NBA, they don't have a stretch forward. Thad Young is an excellent player. Love everything he does. Can't shoot the three. And you don't have anyone behind him unless you believe in T.J. Leaf, who I thought looked terrible in summer league, unless you think he's going to be the stretch option behind Thad Young. So they were able to do it, if you think about it, without a stretch four in the starting lineup or on the bench, without a two-guard who could shoot, Lance Stephenson. And they were undersized in the backcourt with, you know, Darren Collison as a point guard. So Tariq Evans at 6'6 gives you some versatility. You can roll out some three-guard lineups. He can post up smaller guards on switches. It's something that the Pacers didn't do well at all. And maybe he gives you some, again, he gives you some options that you didn't have last year. And so I think for that reason, Evans fits. But defensively, I have some questions about Evans too, not as great as the ones I'd have with McDermott. But I think the bigger deal is, can you be a better offensive team and not sacrifice the type of defensive team they were at the end of last year? Because they took a team in Cleveland that averaged 111 points a game in the regular season. They held them, I think, to 94 in the playoffs, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Hey, Miles Turner, he's a guy that came into the league with a lot of fanfare. He's increased his shooting range just about every year. We know he's a solid rebounder and shot blocker. How good can this kid be?
He could be really good. I mean, the stretch option that they lack at the four, they have it at the five with Miles. So, okay, you don't have a stretch four, but you can have a big who's a stretch five, and, you know, you can run out Sabonis and play him maybe at the five and move Turner to the four, right? So you have some versatility with Miles. I think there's a lot of potential with him. I mean, he looks great physically. I mean, let's face it, a lot of guys look great physically this time of year, and they talk about how they're ready and they're recommitted to playing, and then they come back in the season, it's the same thing. But I think Miles has a lot of potential. His size, his shooting ability. The biggest observation I had about him as soon as I got here last season was I looked at a lot of video, was breaking down some film on him. When he is the screener, the biggest issue I had with Miles is when he would pop to about the free throw line. He wouldn't pop to the three-point line. And as a result, even if he made the shot, obviously you're getting one fewer point when he could have easily gotten a wide-open three. The other point that is, though, that when he would pop there, it would kill the spacing. Mm-hmm. So there weren't lanes. If he pops to the top of the key rather than the foul line, it opens up that space for cutters and it gives you some other options offensively. He didn't do that a lot. And I remember going to some players on the team, and I pointed that out. And one of the guys said to me, he says, Miles isn't used to doing that. His mind isn't popping to the arc. He needs to work on that in the off season, and so he can, A, be more efficient, and B, he can bump up his averages, particularly his overall scoring average a little bit more, and make it a little bit more dynamic offense. So I think with Miles, with all the potential he has, I think being more aggressive and popping to that three-point line, because some people think Coach Nate McMillan wanted him to pop there, and I think there's probably some truth to that part too, but I actually asked McMillan about that. He says, no, we would prefer if he pops to the three-point line because of those spacing issues. So I think with Miles, it's more of those sorts of things in finding his spot. And again, if you put him on the floor with Victor doing that with a Tyreek Evans three-point shooting on the other side of the floor, now you really open it up and you can have a more dynamic offense.
Well, you look at the Pacers roster, and with the additions that they added with Tyreek Evans and McDermott, they draft Aaron Holiday, the third Holiday brother, in the first round, the point guard out of UCLA. You also have Corey Joseph, a backup point guard. We haven't even talked about Domantas Sabonis, who had a really good first year with the Pacers as well. When you add in that second unit to the entire starting lineup returning, Pacers were 48-34 last season. Can they be even better in the upcoming season and maybe challenge one of those top three teams in the East?
I think there's no doubt about it, because you consider that the East is probably, you know, look, Toronto's already going to be a top four team, Boston.
And Philly, Philadelphia.
Yeah, Philly, right? So I think the Pacers are right in that mix behind those three. And I think, Boston probably has, I think, the biggest ability to pull away, I think, and really create separation between number one and the rest of the pack. But the bottom half of the East, just to me, isn't that strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the Pacers can be a 50-win team. they clearly can be a more offensive-minded team and score a lot more. But I think there's no doubt that they can be pushed for a three seed. And, you know, every year when we do these rankings, I think I penciled them in a list that I did. I had them at four.
Right.
But I actually consider putting them at three. But I'll say four to play it safe, which gets you first round court advantage in the playoffs. But I think it's a legitimate opportunity for them, especially the way I think the schedule is set up, where they play so many West Coast road games and get them out of the way early in the season. And maybe you could, if they can have a record by the time we get to the end of December, where they are, you know, 10 games over 500 or something like that, going into the second half of the season, when I look at how the schedule's broken down, a lot of road trips in the West are out of the way, then I think finishing the season, you know, everybody, we always talk about by the time we get post-All-Star break, we see teams dragging with the travel schedule, with the back-to-backs, that maybe they got some of that out the way, and that puts them in a better position to close strong, to push one of those teams for a three seed.
If you love baseball, you can't miss NBC Sports Chicago's newest show, Baseball Night in Chicago. Between Ozzie Guillen, Doug Glanville, Bill Melton, David DeJesus, there's never a dull moment. For complete listings and guest information, visit NBCSportsChicago.com/Baseball Night in Chicago.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Schanowski, joined by Jay Michael, the Pacers beat reporter for the Indianapolis Star. And since this is the Bulls Talk Podcast, let's talk about the Bulls a little bit. Obviously, this is a team you followed and watched closely over the years. I was blown away by all the preseason polls that are coming out and the Vegas odds where they're picking the Bulls to win 27.5, 28.5 wins. I'm telling people, bet the over and bet a lot of money on it, because when you look at the fact they add Wendell Carter Jr., Chandler Hutchison in the draft, they signed Jabari Parker as a free agent, they match an offer sheet on Zach LaVine, who will be another 6 months removed from that ACL surgery and will be healthy for training camp. To me, they look like a 35-win team minimum to me. What's your take on the new-look Bulls?
I would agree. I think you could bet the over, especially, again, the bottom half of the East is when I was ranking the bottom half of the East, it's really hard to figure them out because there's so many teams. Look, to me, the Bulls could end up 13th or they could end up somewhere around 10th. I mean, I think they
could make the playoffs if everything comes together. I wouldn't predict it, but you look at those teams towards the bottom. We'll talk about Washington in a little bit, but you look at Miami, Washington, Detroit. Those teams, to me, are not playoff locks. I think a team like the Bulls, like potentially a Charlotte, maybe even Cleveland, if they can pull that thing together, are still going to contend for one of those final playoff spots.
Yeah, right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, every time we go into a season, there's going to be a team that we think is going to be really good that's not very good or mediocre. There's a team that we think is going to be really bad or at the bottom of the table that's going to be significantly higher than we predicted. And so I think there's always a room for a wild card like that. And I'll tell you this. I was talking – I think I was talking to Vinny Goodwill about this not too long ago. I said, you know, when I went into – I looked at the Bulls roster, this is before all the free agent moves happened, and I said, man, this roster is some trash. I don't like it. The Bulls aren't going to be very good. And then they did some things in the draft. I love the Wendell Carter move.
You look good in summer league, I'll tell you. He was really good.
I mean, look, summer league doesn't guarantee anything,
right,
but I think what it promises you is that there's something there, and it could potentially grow into something special.
You know what was good about him in summer league, Jay Michael, is that he knew that the knock on him was that he couldn't move his feet that quick laterally and that maybe he couldn't switch out on smaller guys. And between the time he left Duke and the draft, he slimmed down, he worked on his weaknesses, and you could see him switching out on point guards and perimeter players, and he already showed in that small sample size that what people perceived as a weakness is not going to be a problem at all. He also looked to be a better rim protector than what people projected. So I think in tandem with Lauri Markkanen, that can be something that really works for this Bulls team.
Yeah, they have a little bit more promise, I think. It's a little bit more to look forward to. So if the odds are saying that they're going to win around 28 games, there's no doubt I would take the over on that. You know, a guy who I was really high on that I thought the Pacers should have potentially taken if he were available, it turns out that he wasn't, was Chandler Hutchison.
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge fan of his as well. But, You know, so yeah, I think there's some. This team has more offensive capability in particular than I expected them to have. You know, you go into the summer, a team's roster looks this way, make certain moves, and they look a lot better to me. So I would say my biggest question about the Bulls is the ball handling and the what's going to happen at top with the guards. Is that going to be good enough to put guys like Wendell Carter in position to succeed? And, you know, maybe the answer is yes. And if it's yes, then the guard play is good enough, then who knows? And will Wendell Carter lives up to what he showed us in summer league? The East is, you know, once we get past the first top five or six teams in the East, it's a crapshoot to mm-hmm. me for the most part. The only team to me that completely has no chance is the Knicks. Everybody else, I can even see something in the Nets.
Right.
Believe it or not. Like, certain things can break a certain way, and, you know, there's always going to be a team that turns out to be better than what we expected at the bottom. And the Bulls could definitely, at least talent-wise, be one of them.
You know, the editors are making sure that your writers stay busy around the league. And Bleacher Report recently named their five most overhyped players. And Zach LaVine checked in that list at number three. And I think part of that is the contract he got, which some people think is much more money than he deserved coming off the ACL injury. Part of it, he's a two-time slam dunk champion with a lot of flash and sizzle to his game. Part of it is he ranks near the bottom into the defensive metrics. But what's your take on Zach LaVine, and you think it was fair to name him one of the most overhyped players in the league?
Man, those lists are always tough.
Yeah,
It's look, let's get to his contract. I mean, his contract is a function of restricted free agency. So, you know, all teams go through this every year. You know, is he worth – you're going to either pay now, are you willing to lose him for nothing?
Right.
And even if the team doesn't think – hey, we really don't want to give this guy this price tag. I mean, I would, you know, a couple of years ago with Otto Porter getting $106 million, it was the same thing. But if you don't match it, he goes. Well, let him go. That's what people say. Okay, well,
yeah.
Who are you replacing him with? If you have a viable replacement either on your roster or that you think you're going to acquire in free agency or a trade, fine, let him go. But if you don't, you can't afford to let him go, especially if you're trying to rebuild.
And the thing is now, a contract 4 for $78, people go, that's crazy money. That's tradable as the cap is going up.
Oh, yeah, it is tradable. I mean, come on. People forget about the contracts that we had a couple of years ago.
Yeah, right.
Moss Goff and Mahimi. Like, really, it's all – but it's like everything. It's all relative, right? So
yeah.
Here's what I think about LaVine as a player. One of the biggest observations I had of him when they played the Wizards, and I remember the first time Scott Brooks, the coach of the Wizards, got to see Zach LaVine, and I went up to him after a game. We were small talking about him, and I said, in the T-Wolves at the time, they got absolutely worked. And I was like, man, I was incredibly disappointed in what I saw in LaVine. Like, he seems like he's just gliding out there. And in a way, it looks like he's not even going top speed. And he's just – you could see the physical skill set and the tools there, but he just kind of hung around the perimeter, you know, caught the ball. I think he jacked up 14 threes, made two of them that night.
Yeah.
Didn't really attack the basket. He just kind of settled for a lot of stuff. And I just thought his mentality wasn't as aggressive as it needed to be. And so I said that to him, and he was like, I don't have any – Scott Brooks didn't say anything back. And I said, so you agree with me? He's like, I didn't say that, right? But I was like, okay. I was like, that's just my observations. But anyway, I talked to some players in the locker room, some Wizards players, and kind of ran those observations by them. And I had players say to me, like, yeah, it's like he's a good player. They were fearful of him, but he never really put them on the spot. He never really put them in jeopardy. And so I just think that's kind of – and that was before his ACL injury. So – I think that all goes to say is that, yeah, LaVine has a lot of potential, but at a certain point, is it going to be realized, or is this what he is? If this is what he is, yeah, that contract's probably bigger than what it doesn't match his talent. But, you know, the Bulls had to match it in order to keep him. You just couldn't let him walk. The Bulls aren't so talented to where they could just let him walk for nothing and say, well, we'll just rely on whomever. You have to have a stacked team in order to do that. right?
Yeah, and in this stage of the rebuild, there's no way they could let a young talent like that walk away and get nothing in return, especially since he was the centerpiece of the Butler trade.
Right. You're not Golden State letting Harrison Barnes go. Well, okay, go ahead. No, you're not in that position. So I think they had to get him. They had to keep him. The market dictated it. But I do think they're, hopefully for Zach's sake and the Bulls' sake, then, you know, there's a lot more there. Because I think he can be a really good player. Just, you know, I don't know if it's a skill thing as much as it's a between the ears thing.
Have you ever wanted to watch a Cubs game with David Kaplan? Now's your chance. Every authentic fan night, tune in to NBC Sports Chicago's Facebook page and watch the sixth inning sidecast with Cap, David DeJesus, and more special guests. They'll take your questions as they comment on the game action.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm visiting with Jay Michael, who's the Pacers beat reporter for the Indianapolis Star. Jay Michael used to cover for a number of years the Washington Wizards. I know you got to know John Wall and Bradley Beal very well. John Wall is an interesting guy. You know, I know that he said last year when the season came to an end, that he wanted the Wizards to get more athletic on the front line to try to upgrade the talent in the front court. And then they go and bring in America's guest, Dwight Howard, who says he wants to be a combination of Anthony Davis and Kevin Durant at this point in his career. So that means that Dwight Howard is going to go stand out and flick those three-point shots? I mean, to me, this is a recipe for disaster. What do you think?
Man, you want to talk about when I saw that? That was one of the biggest face palms I've ever had. The season, you haven't even gotten to training camp yet, and you're saying to be fair, his trainers, the people we've been working with, have kind of used that comparison to those guys,
right?
And it's you know, Anthony Davis and KD.
Two of the top five players in the league.
I jokingly said, look, if they had said, hey, we want him to be like a Brook Lopez type of three-point shooter, even that's a stretch, That's a stretch, but fine. But those guys, okay, so number one, you muddied the water by using those examples because that's not going to happen. Let's be real here. And, you know, the problem that Dwight has had, even when he was in Atlanta, I mean, he only lasted 1 year in his hometown for a reason.
Right.
I mean, he only lasted 1 year in Charlotte for a reason. Everybody's been playing hot potato with him, you know, or old car game that I used to play back in the day called Pass the Trash. They've been playing that with Dwight Howard for a few, you know, 5 years now, 5, 6 years. Because I remember him playing for Atlanta against the Wizards in the playoffs. And my observations are still on Twitter, and even with the video breakdowns I had of Howard. And I said, look, if Dwight Howard is going to continue to catch the ball off the pick, and instead of slicing to the rim, he's going to pop for 16-foot jumpers. He's going to get that all day. And it's going to give him good numbers because he's going to hit a couple of them because they're going to be wide open and uncontested, but it's going to kill the team. It's going to kill the offense. And I just feel like the way Dwight has played recently is about his numbers. And he's a classic case of a guy, I believe, who is intent on improving that. And these comments recently kind of solidify what my feeling was of showing that I'm still an all-star caliber guy. I'm a future Hall of Fame caliber guy. I can be one of the top options on this team. When the reality is for the Wizards, he can't be an option over John Wall. He can't be an option over Bradley Beal. He can't even be an option over Otto Porter. Dwight Howard is probably your fourth offensive option. And that didn't sound like those comments like a guy who's planning on being the fourth option. And I think that's where the difficulty is going to arise.
Well, back to your relationship with John Wall, I mean, there's been some comments that have been downright, you know, dissension in the last couple of years. If they get off to a slow start, is he going to blow up and ask for a trade? Or how is he going to handle all this?
From what I know, he's – Number one, he's cool with Dwight and helped him come to Washington. So I think maybe he'll keep his mouth shut for a while on that front. But I think I think you're getting to the point that if this blows up this season, if this team underperforms and you get another season of what we've seen the last couple of seasons from them, I think you're going to have no choice but to trade some people. I don't know if it's going to be something where he or anybody else would say, I want to trade. I think you're at a point where you're going to have to do something to blow that thing up if you can't get it right this year. And here's my bigger concern for them, though. Instead of them starting bad, this is what I have told people. Don't pay attention to the first 25, 30 games for them.
Right.
Because if they play bad, yes. But let's say they start out and they're one of the top three teams in the East for the first 20, 30 games. It's not about the short game with them. It's about the long game, because we've seen consistently they've had these stretches where they look like, wow, this team could make it to the conference finals. They have trouble sustaining excellence, and they have a way of turning on themselves and each other and just completely muddying up their own Picasso. They got everything going perfectly. You see this happen year after year when they had Gortat, and they always something petty. Pettiness always somehow enters the conversation in the whole locker room. That locker room hasn't been stable for the last 5 years.
Right.
Okay. Anybody who tells you otherwise is disconnected and don't know what had been going on or is lying. Okay. And the personalities of that locker room are just, I mean, Paul Pierce had very critical comments about the way they were. I remember Al Harrington said that they are mentally weak, that they, as soon as they get a little bit of pushback, they fray and turn on each other. So now that you've added Dwight Howard, is that going to be better or worse? So statistically, I think they could have a good start to the season, and everybody's talking about, oh, look at this, this is working out. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about when something goes bad, when you hit a 4 or 5-game losing streak, when Dwight's not getting his touches, what happens then?
Well, one thing's for sure, that the drama in Washington, D.C. coming up this fall will not be confined to politics. And as we say that, let's move on to our last segment here on Bulls Talk. J. Michael, we're going to go through some quick hitters. It's been another eventful summer around the league. So just give me a short answer on all these topics. And I know that I didn't prep you on this, so it's kind of off the top of your head. But what's the one storyline you're really watching for around the league during training camp? When the teams get ready to go to camp, what are you most curious to see during that period where teams are getting ready for the season?
I'm curious to see Boston with Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. I mean, mm-hmm. This is supposed to be the best team in the East.
Yeah.
Coming off injuries, is this going to be the best team in the East still? Or are we looking at something completely different that's going to upset the apple cart?
Yeah, there could be some friction with Jason Tatum emerging as the star, Jaylen Brown right behind him, and then you got Gordon Hayward rehabbing, Kyrie Irving coming off another serious injury. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that chemistry works. One thing they have going for him is Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach, and it seems like he's able to get guys to buy into his system.
Yes, he is. He's great.
All right, let's talk about NBA champion. Is it a Golden State march to the title, or can someone seriously challenge them?
I don't see anybody seriously challenging them. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think when people get excited, people will get excited when Golden State goes through a losing streak like they had last year. They had a couple of them where they won 57 games or underperformed by their standards. But who cares? It's about the postseason for them. I don't see anybody. Houston, I think, had the best chance, and I don't think Houston is good this upcoming season as they were last season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Melo fits with that thing, but that's a topic for a whole other podcast. MVP, I have a feeling that LeBron might get some love from the voters because they kind of moved away from him over the last 4 or 5 years. If he can get the Lakers to 50 wins, I think he wins the MVP. Who would be your early season pick for MVP?
Ooh, 50 wins for LeBron and what? See, I don't see 50 wins for the Lakers, but yeah, if he got him there, I would agree with you. That would put him in serious consideration. MVP, I think if Kawhi Leonard could get the Raptors to not only being a top seed, but a top seed that people fear, that it could be a guy like Kawhi. To me, the West has so many darn good players. I think they all kind of take votes away from each other, and it's harder for them to stand out. I'm going to go with Kawhi, obviously, provided that he's healthy, but I think he could turn Toronto around.
Rookie of the year, I'm just going to take the obvious choice, DeAndre Ayton. I think that he's going to be featured in that mm-hmm. offense. I think he's going to get big points, both points and rebounds. A guy who might be a long shot is Trae Young, only because he's going to get to take a ton of shots and his stats are probably going to be big at the end of the year. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I like DeAndre and with Phoenix. I mean, when you look at rookie of the year in particular, it's the guys who have – it's not about, the team's record. It's about – a lot of stats, and it's the guys who can get the most impressive numbers. That's what happens more often than not. So that's where I look at guys like DeAndre who will get his numbers. I like Marvin Bagley. Even though he's in Sacramento, which seems to mean like nothing good happens in Sacramento, I could see a guy like him or Jaren Jackson popping up in that conversation. But I think DeAndre is a pretty good guess.
All right, which quality teams will miss the playoffs in the West? Everyone says the West is like 11 teams deep. I think San Antonio is going to find a way to squeeze in there because Popovich is such a good coach. And getting DeMar DeRozan in that trade for Kawhi is no joke. I think they're going to be okay. And they got a couple of good young guards in Lonnie Walker and DeJounte Murray. I think that Denver may still miss the playoffs. I think Minnesota is in jeopardy. And I think the Pelicans could be in trouble too. How do you see it?
What about Portland?
Yeah, Portland too, right.
I'm gonna say Portland because I don't know if did Portland get better this offseason.
No.
And
they're running it back, basically.
Yeah, so I'm going to say why some of these other teams have changed things and changed the narrative and held or at least held pat. I think maybe Portland has taken a little bit of a step back, especially after they got embarrassed in the first round of the playoffs last year. So I'm going to say Portland is my odd team out this year.
All right, excluding the Lakers, which lottery team will make the biggest jump in the upcoming season?
Ooh, Memphis. I like everything Memphis has done.
Yeah?
I like the Jaren Jackson addition. I love the Javon Carter addition. He was my favorite sleeper coming out of the draft, this draft.
Mm-hmm.
The year before it was John Collins for me who ended up in Orlando, and Kyle Kuzma were my two guys from the previous year. I'm going to go with Memphis because I think Javon Carter and Jaren Jackson. And I hope my guy, Yuta Watanabe, who they picked up from GW, who's an excellent defensive player. This is a defensive grit-and-grind team again. So I'm going to say Memphis because, let's face it, when you finish that far down, you can't go nowhere but up. But I think they're going to make a pretty significant jump.
Yeah, it's going to be fun watching Dallas as well with Luka Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. in the backcourt. They'll be fun. I don't know if they'll make a huge jump. And like I said about the Bulls, don't sleep on the Bulls. I think they win 35 games minimum next season. All right, last
minimum.
Question. Yeah.
Wow.
Last
okay.
question, we'll let you go. Which free agent come for next summer? We're already looking at 2019 free agency. Which big-name free agent is most likely to change teams next summer and will be the talk of the NBA in next July?
Oh, boy. Well, you have to ask me a real tough one. 2019 free agent.
I'm thinking Jimmy Butler. I think Jimmy's going to – he's already feuding with Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, saying they don't work hard enough. If Minnesota misses the playoffs, and even if they just squeeze in as a 7th or 8th seed, I think Jimmy's got his eyes on L.A. or – maybe teaming up with his buddy Kyrie Irving with either the Nets or the Knicks.
That's actually probably a really good guess. And actually considering what we know about Jimmy, yeah, I think that's probably your biggest bet. I mean, look, guys like DeAndre Jordan, who's on a one-year deal, I mean, I wouldn't consider him on the level of a star of a Jimmy Butler, but, leaving Dallas, is that a monumental move? I don't think so. But Klay Thompson going Golden State is going to be, I think he's unrestricted next summer.
Right.
That would be, now if he moved, I think that would be the biggest just because of what he's meant to Golden State. But I think probably Butler would be the biggest, most likely guy.
And, of course, Kawhi, everybody thinks he's got his eyes on Los Angeles.
Yeah, but I think if he's really successful in Toronto and they do some things, I think Kawhi can be the best player in the East, and
right.
maybe he may end up having the same experience Paul George had with Oklahoma City. Except Paul George is the number two guy in Oklahoma City. Kawhi be the number one guy in Toronto. So I would say those guys. I would say Butler's probably the most likely. I would think if say a Klay Thompson left, I think that would perhaps be the most impactful move if somebody was to jump teams next year in free agency.
Well, the great thing is we got a whole season to play before all that. We have to worry about those kind of storylines. It's going to be a lot of fun in the East, especially with Big Bad LeBron now off to the Western Conference. I want to thank J. Michael for being so generous with his time. He's a great follow on Twitter, @ThisIsJMichael. How can they follow your coverage at the Indy Star, J. Michael?
Yeah, I'll be at IndyStar.com /Pacers. Anything Pacers, but of course, a lot of stuff that I do stuff about more than Pacers. I'm always looking at every team in the league, so I try to touch on a little bit of everybody have a little bit for everybody to enjoy. So as much as I talk about the Pacers, I look at opponents and break down those guys too. So at IndyStar.com, you can find me there. And it's like you said, at my Twitter handle, at This Is Your Life.
Well, thank you again so much for your time. It's been a fun offseason. Nice to know that media days, start of training camp, only 5-6 weeks away. It's going to be a lot of fun getting this rolling again. Remember, you can find all of our Bulls Talk podcasts at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcasts. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple, Stitcher, and Google Play. Our thanks to J. Michael. Until next time, so long, everybody.